Sox Unfiltered podcast. I am your host, Patrick Green. Very excited to be back for another episode of our lovely podcast. And joining me, as always, is my lovely co-host, my dear co-host, Dave Latham. Dave, say hi to everybody.
How's it going, everyone? I hope you're doing better than the Bruins are right now. It's 2-0, and the second period's almost over.
Yeah, it's not looking too great for the Bruins right now. But, you know, they're a good team. Hopefully they'll pull it out. I'm not a huge hockey fan, but I know Dave is invested. I don't know. Chris is probably not invested, but he lives in Massachusetts, so maybe he cares. And also joining us is Chris Drozin, our lovely producer. Chris, say hi.
I don't care, for the record.
Yeah,
I mean, I can't say I don't care, but, like, it's indifferent to me.
You're indifferent.
You don't think everybody Boston, to come and to kill me.
You don't think Boston needs another championship? It's been too long.
I mean,
think of the 4-month-old babies that haven't seen a championship.
That is selfish.
And honestly, if you're looking at it from a statistical standpoint, we're due for a mean regression. So I'm taking all of them that I can take as, like, once this run ends, we're probably not seeing anything for, like, another 60 years.
I actually have a funny story about this. Today, I interned at a news station, and I said to somebody that I wanted the Blues to win because Boston has too many championships. And, you know, it was just kind of like one of those things you say to keep a conversation going or just to start a conversation, even though I didn't really even believe it nor cared or had anything invested into it. And this news anchor overheard me. And then she was like, young man, what do you want to do when you're older? Or what are you going to do with your career? And I said, maybe broadcasting journalism. I don't know. That's why I'm here. And she's like, well, remind me to not watch what station you're doing or relish or care about your success because, you know, you would be winning too much. And I was like, oh, God. Yeah, she got really upset because I came at the Boston institution, the Boston juggernaut, even though I didn't really care. But I think I really struck a nerve with her. So that was something that happened today. But yeah, we need to actually pivot before we start for the rest of this episode and talk about and give our condolences to David Ortiz. Obviously, this happened earlier over the weekend. He was shot in the Dominican Republic in a bar. He's been transferred to Boston as our current updates are that we have. His wife said that he is making good progress towards a recovery, which is very good news. It was a very scary, awful situation. And I think every Red Sox fan, and I think everybody in the community, baseball community, Red Sox community, even people who just know of David Ortiz, are sending their condolences, their thoughts and prayers to him and their family. David Ortiz is beloved. He's one of the most charitable, loving, good-hearted people in the world and in this business especially. So it was definitely heartbreaking to hear of that on I think it was Sunday. And you know, he's in Boston now, and hopefully he can make a full recovery, and hopefully this doesn't impede anything, because this was a travesty. There are 5 suspects in custody, and there's a 6th one still on the loose. But yeah, this was tragic, and again, David Ortiz and his family, we wish you nothing but the best in this, and our thoughts and prayers are with you. Anybody want to add to that, Dave?
No, I mean, I think you hit nail on the head. Obviously, David Ortiz, he's a Red Sox legend, but his impact goes far beyond just Boston sports. Everyone, we're all sending him the best.
Yeah. What about you, Chris? Anything?
Nothing extra.
Okay, cool. Yeah, it was a sad situation, but all right, we're gonna truck along here and talk about the Red Sox and what they've been up to since we last podcasted. I don't think we've podcast. What was the last series of podcast? Was it the Yankees?
I believe so.
I think it was,
yeah,
the Yankees. Yeah, I think we recorded during the Red Sox Yankee game.
Yeah, we anyway, recorded right at the beginning of that, and then we talked about the Indians and the Houston Astros.
Yeah. Okay. So.
And I feel like not much has changed since then.
Yeah, it seemed promising. The Royal series seemed promising. A sweep of the lowly Kansas City Royals got the Red Sox, I believe, to at least four games over 500. And things looked like they were trending up. They weren't, obviously, as in the two ensuing series have shown. The Red Sox only could manage to take one of three in the first two games. And they play the Rangers again tomorrow, so that's not set in stone. But, yeah, let's start with the Royals series. Did you guys think that the Red Sox had gained any momentum while you were watching this series, Dave?
Not particularly, because it's the Royals. And, I mean, you know, you don't really get bonus points for beating a glorified AAA team.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. What about you, Chris? Were you thinking, like, yeah, this is the Red Sox time. They've won four games in a row. They're going to take this into Tampa and Texas and start winning games.
Nope. That's not what was going to happen, and that's not what I thought was going to happen.
Look,
the Royals are trash. Right? They are. I don't need to go down the rabbit hole like I did with the Indians, but the Royals are trash. They're just trash.
Yeah, I mean, the Royals are probably the second or third worst team in the MLB, and I think
Last I knew, they were tied with the Orioles for the worst team, but I haven't looked at it since I heard that, so.
The Marlins were off to a historically bad start, but did they get, like, hot or something? Did they start winning a couple games?
I mean, define hot.
Like, two games in a row.
Fortune.
Yeah, see, it's all relative to Marlins' standards. But yeah, Kansas City series, the Red Sox scored 7+ runs in each of those. And, you know, that was encouraging. The offense is finally at a consistent pace. But again, we also have to go in with the qualifier that it's the freaking Kansas City Royals. But it was still nice. I mean, the Red Sox had a tough schedule recently, and they were going to play a couple of tough teams in the future. And obviously the future, since the Royals series, has not been very fun. Red Sox lost 3 of 4 to the Tampa Bay Rays. They had a doubleheader on Saturday. They picked up the nightcap, but that was it. They got outscored pretty significantly by the good margin. And, God, this was a deflating series. You know, it was a team that was second right above the Red Sox, and it looked like they may have been able to make ground. And now, let me ask you what you guys actually saw from that series and what your thoughts were about that. I'll start with you, Dave.
I saw a team that can't beat good teams. The record speaks for itself. I think they have, like, not even a 400% against playoff teams. And they can find a way for Chris Sale and David Price to pitch every single game, like, by the time September or October roll around. I don't know what this team has for a solution, because the pitching's awful, the offense can't drive in anyone with guys in scoring position, and right now it just looks like a mess.
Yeah, I'll echo all of that. And now let me ask you a follow-up question. Do you think that the Rays have officially vaulted over the Red Sox as of this year for the division fight with the Yankees?
I would have said yes to that like a few weeks ago.
Yeah, Chris, you like how I read like in
I'm word glad for that word you said like word for word what I wrote.
I didn't change it up at all. I literally read it right off the page. But yeah, you think Tampa Bay has officially vaulted over the Red Sox, Chris?
Oh, 1,000%. That's like the Red Sox are 15-23 against teams that are over 500. Rays are 20-18. The Yankees are 11-11.
Oh, wait, 11-11. That feels like they haven't played that many tough teams.
They haven't.
It doesn't look like they have, no.
They're also missing all of their good players, and they're coming back, so I think that sort of cancels itself out.
Yeah, I guess. Look, the Yankees are a very deep team, unlike the Red Sox, as we're starting to painfully find out. Yeah, the Rays series was not very, very good. And again, it is kind of just proved and bolstered the pre-existing notion, at least as far as this season is concerned, that the Red Sox cannot beat playoff teams. Even the Rangers, who the Red Sox are playing this current series, they have lost 2 of 3. They play again tomorrow. But they've lost 2 of 3 against the team that you're competing with, who actually has a second wild card, who's actually somehow good, when they were not even close to being supposing to be good. And they're doing it off the backs of Mike Minor and Lance Lynn anchoring their rotation. Guys people thought really didn't have a shot of reverting back to once they what were once were. And now they're doing exceptional. And the Rangers, and today even, it looked like the Red Sox, I mean, who picked up a 4-3 victory. They had the walk-off walk. And then on the 10th, which was on Monday, they lost 4-3 after Matt Barnes, Backpack Barnes, the one bullpen guy that I had some semblance and trust in, and Marcus Walden, and Heath Embry, he blew that save. And the Red Sox lost that game. So, I mean, like, these games with the Rangers are painfully close. They don't look like – when they have a bad pitching performance. Like, they had a great one on Monday with Chris Sale, but they didn't score enough runs, and the bullpen absolutely faltered. And the next night, they gave up so many runs, and even though they scored 5 runs, which is about average, they couldn't win the game. So, like, it's a consistency thing for the offense, for the rotation, and for the bullpen. So what have you guys noticed in this series so far that you guys want to talk about? Dave, you go first with the Rangers series.
Okay, I think it's just more of the same. This team just cannot find a way to beat good teams, and it's just more taking defeat from the jaws of victory. You keep finding new and creative ways to lose, and the bullpen, which was a huge question mark throughout the season, is starting to get worse because Barnes has had a bad couple of weeks. Walden's been in some trouble. Really, it's bad when I see Heath Embry might be the second or third most reliable guy in the pen. That's terrible.
Yeah, it's is it, what's the CRA now? Is it like 250?
Something like that.
That's pretty good. His FIP is a lot worse, by the way, so there should be some aggression. Not to say Heath Embry has not had a good year, but kind of like a Ryan Brazier year last year so far. I don't know how sustainable it is, but we'll see. What about you, Chris? What have you noticed from this Rangers series?
The Red Sox are a terrible team against playoff teams. Mm. And the whole thing where we're all complaining about the bullpen that actually like reared its ugly head. I mean, again, but it's like I'm sick and tired of talking about this bullpen, but this bullpen is trash. It's just straight trash right now. So they got to do something. I don't know what it is, but they got to do something because I think what they were banking on going into the season was somebody catching fire, and that was Matt Barnes for a while. But then the wheels fell off, and then I guess maybe Hembry, maybe he's the guy. Maybe he's the guy.
All right.
I'm looking at you. Just look at what happened in the Rangers series, and you're like, all right. Let's just, like, do some weird things on the base paths and, like, just play really sloppy baseball. And that's what we've been watching is sloppy baseball all year.
I agree. I think it is illuminating, however, that the Red Sox continue to go back to Matt Barnes in today's game in the 9th inning when they were not at a 3-3, arguably the highest leverage situation. He ended up getting the win. And now the thing is, like, he is still having a great year. His ERA before today, this is not updated, but it was 3.76, which is not great. It's not even really in the realm of good. Like Ryan Brazier's is 3.77, for example. But the underlying stuff, the peripheral stuff, 2.42 FIP, 1.60 xFIP. So there's a lot to like. He's striking out 16 guys per 9. He's walking a little bit, but nothing too crazy. Like, Matt Barnes has strikeout closer lethal stuff, and we've seen it for most of this year. It's just right now, or at least in this stretch of a couple of weeks or last week or so, hasn't been there. But I expect Barnes to be the anchor of this bullpen, not to say that they shouldn't do something else, because they really should get another guy into the bullpen, because this is not a good group. This is not a strong group. And if you want to get back to a wild card playoff run, you're going to need somebody. Dave, talk to me about Darwinson Hernandez's starting debut, because I know you've been itching to talk about this.
My boy Darwinson. So everything you saw, that was peak Darwinson Hernandez. Like, it was the most Darwinson Hernandez thing I've ever watched, and it tells you everything you need to know about the guy. The first four batters, he strikes out the first four he faces, and He gets out of the first inning in 13 pitches. It's heavenly. It's majestic. He walks the next two. You get the control issues piling up again. He ends up allowing one run in the second, and you know, but he pitches his way out of it. I think he strikes out another and induces a weak pop up for the third out. Then the third inning comes. He starts walking guys again. Gets one or two more strikeouts. But I'm just watching it, and I'm just like, this is the most star Winston Hernandez thing that has ever happened. Because that's the report on this guy. When he's finding the plate, he's unhittable, but he just loses his control too much. And I was really hoping he'd be able to figure it out in Portland with another year of basically saying, hey, you have the stuff, just focus on finding the strike zone only. But his command's only gotten worse and worse, and the more I see of it, the more I think, you know, the odds of this guy panning out as a starter are getting slimmer and slimmer. He can fix the bullpen. He can be an upgrade. I don't want to see Josh Smith pitch for the Red Sox ever again. So I'm all for just trying Darwin's and Hernandez one inning at a time at the major league level.
Yeah. He struck out 7 and he walked 5 in that start. And again, very emblematic of what we thought of Darwin's and Hernandez. And he brought it to the major leagues. I mean, the guy strikes out people at an insane rate, but he walks people at an even insaner rate, relatively speaking. Kind of like what Brandon Workman's doing out of the bullpen. Like, I think, like, you could, like, Workman, at least Workman this
year. Workman doesn't have the stuff. Honestly, my comp to him is, like, basically pre-2019 Matt Barnes.
Yeah, that's a good one. I'm not talking about stuff, but, like, I mean, you look at Brandon Workman's 12.58 K per nine and Workman's 5.52 walk per nine. Like, I could see Darwin's and Hernandez, you know, doing that at the major league level if he was a regular bullpen.
I think his walk rate, like, it would still be high, but it would go down if he was only going an inning at a time.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. So, oh yeah, for sure.
I think it'd be more like what Barnes did last year, where he's striking out a whole lot of guys, but he's walking a lot more than you'd like to see as well.
And Matt Barnes last year was really good.
Yeah, yeah, no, don't think I'm down on Darwin's and Hernandez. He has a very bright major league future. It's just probably not as a starter.
Well, what about you, Chris? What do you want to weigh in here on Darwin's and Hernandez?
Not really. I mean, Dave. I'm pretty much retweeting what Dave said. I'm not the biggest prospect guy, but I don't know. I'm just tired of watching people get walked.
I'm tired of watching these spot starters come in and just absolutely do awful. And the Red Sox miss Nathan Eovaldi. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
It's bad. They don't have pitching depth. They don't have starting depth. And, like, I think Alex Cora even mentioned it at some point in the last week, where he was like, well, this is why I was telling you guys how valuable Brian Johnson and Hector Velasquez were last year and how underrated they were. Because, you know, they came in when their starter was inevitably hurt. Johnson and Hector Velasquez were serviceable. They were never great. They were never going to make headlines, but they were serviceable. What you're having right now is the antithesis of serviceable. It's just crap. It's just throwing Ryan Weber, Josh Taylor, Josh Smith.
Somehow not Mike Schworn.
Yeah, somehow not Mike Schworn.
Did you see he's now a reliever?
Schworn?
Yeah, exclusively a reliever. That's what I saw today.
They're saying exclusively. They sent up a not nearly ready yet Darwin's and Hernandez, and Josh Taylor has had multiple starts, but they're not going to give Mike Schworn a shot?
I think I just made the bear mad.
Oh, you made the bear very mad. That's, like, the biggest – of all the things I can't understand about this season, like purely since the start of the season, why aren't you giving Mike Schworn a chance? If you don't think he's going to be a future starter, great. I don't either. But you can't honestly look in the mirror and say Josh Smith or Ryan Weber give you a better chance to win. Those guys are terrible.
Oh, yeah. Big time. I don't understand it at all. Also, Bobby Pointer came up. Did you guys see that? Did you see how bad his last outing was?
Yeah, he's bad.
Right? Isn't this surprising, though? I think you and I were really on the big Bobby Pointer train. At least I was last year. This has been just a fall from grace.
I liked him. Unsettling. I thought it could be an early inning arm. I didn't think that it would be anything like what he's been this year.
not a 15 ERA and 840 FIP.
Yeah, that's no, I didn't see that coming. No, and Lakins, boy, did he come back to earth.
Oh wow, yeah, it's the guys that you're like, hey, you know, they could fill in and they could be okay, and they just need to shut the major leagues. This bullpen, this patchwork project, has not gone favorably. So, any other thoughts on the bullpen besides completely lambasting them and telling Dave Nebraska to wake the hell up and get an actual good reliever? Anyone else?
I'm throwing that whole thing about that I heard on the game that they're only better giving up runs than the Baltimore Orioles. That's it.
Wow.
Baltimore Orioles are the only team worse than them.
Wow, that's good company.
Yeah, it's very good company.
Orioles are.
They're an elite
Orioles
team.
They're an elite organization.
Yeah, man. They're in a good spot here. The ninth inning.
Yeah, at 21-45, man, they're right there. And I can confirm that the Orioles and Royals are tied for the worst record in baseball, by the way. Looking at the standings. Wow, Marlins 24-42. What a torrid turnaround.
I miss you, Ty Buttrey.
I think we all do. Yeah, could you imagine? That guy's already got like a 1+ WAR, and I know we don't like pit reliever WAR especially, but I'm just saying, like, that's good. Ty Buttrey is good. Like, really,
and they wouldn't
good.
Give him a chance last year.
No, they would not. So, I know we have some Twitter questions, and one of these questions is probably going to consist of the bulk of our conversation here, but it's very relevant, and it's all going to be about, you know, Red Sox are 35-34. It's nice that they're over the 500 hump, but the Red Sox have some major contracts coming up, and they don't have a good reinforcements in the farm. We thought this window was going to last a lot longer, but it may be closing, question mark? I want to get your thoughts, because it's circulating on various media that the Red Sox may have to consider being a seller at the trade deadline way too early. Well, it's not that early. It's like a month and a half away.
No, I think
I think the media you're talking about is the people like us. I mean, not necessarily us, but I don't think it's being bandied about in like the regular media or with Red Sox brass, I bet.
I think
it's fair to speculate this isn't early April.
Well, yeah, when I meant media, but I bet you like who Tony Maserati, is that a guy? Is he like on Red
He's
Sox
a radio,
radio
guy.
Yeah, I bet you that guy's talking about it. I don't know.
He's probably like, blow the whole thing up, guys.
Yeah. Like I can't sit
Is that
here
your
Maz? He's not talking about it.
That was my Maz.
Does he sound anything like that?
I have no idea.
He kind of has a squeaky voice a little bit.
Dave, do you listen to him?
God, no. I don't. All I listen to is podcasts. I haven't listened to talk radio in years.
Oh, wow. Okay. Well, I guarantee you, him, based on what people say about him, is saying stuff like this. that was my point. What were you going to say?
No, I was going to give promotion to a podcaster I don't like, and I don't want to do that. So
you don't want to give him recognition.
Yeah, he doesn't need a spotlight. Name. Nope.
Yeah, let's talk about this, Dave. Do you think the Red Sox should sell? I mean, obviously a lot's going to have to happen, but what are your inclinations right now with this team?
So, I'm just going to say, for the record, I believe in the talent on this team outside of the bullpen. I believe in the starting rotation. The lineup is a lot better than it is. And once you get Eovaldi back, you should have a top rotation, and all of those starters issues should relatively work themselves out. I refuse to believe an offense this good will stay in this type of a rut, like, forever. But they're running out of time to prove me right. So, if this is early July and we're still hovering around 500, if it's not better, absolutely you should sell. You're not one bullpen arm away from fixing this as things currently stand. And even if you are, with the state of the farm system, don't deplete everything to get like Brad Hand or whatever. That's not going to fix any. That's not going to be enough to fix it. You don't have the assets to sell to build a championship team with a 500 roster. If they catch fire, go for it. But right now, I'd sell.
Who would you sell?
Porcello's top on my list. He's a free agent at the end of the year. I wouldn't trade anyone who's under contract for 2020 just because that team should still be competitive, should still be one of the World Series favorites. If you just completely chalk up 2019 to a hangover year. So I wouldn't sell anyone who's going to be under there for 2020. If I knew JD Martinez was going to opt out from his current contract, no matter what you did with him, I'd trade him too. And I'd probably look for someone to buy Holt.
Yeah, I mean, like, that's not unreasonable. Even, like, Mitch Moreland, if he...
Oh, yeah, Moreland, too. Absolutely,
yeah,
Moreland.
If he's healthy and can get you something. I agree with you. I wouldn't trade anything that would, you know, hinder the chances at 2020. So, like, these speculation of Mookie Betts going on right now.
Yeah, that's
Twitter
stupid.
And whatever. Yeah, it's stupid. Anyway, I wouldn't be totally resistant for the Red Sox to get rid of Porcello or get rid of JD would be tough. I don't know about that. Again, we would have to know for sure that he wouldn't come back. And
for the record, when I say trade these guys, I'm not saying you can't re-sign them in the offseason. Look what the Yankees did with Chapman. That was the perfect business plan. That team wasn't going to the playoffs. They got Gleyber Torres out of it, and they got Chapman back for when they were a legitimate contender again.
Yeah. However, I think that JD Martinez may be the only guy that you could get a significant haul for. You probably get Porcello could get you something, but I don't know if it would be worth. Like, I imagine he would command what Nathan Eovaldi commanded from the Red Sox last year, like a Jalen Beeks, a middle of the road prospect at like the upper levels. I don't know.
I would be very happy with that.
I would be happy with that too. But
especially since unless Porcello is completely serious about taking the hometown discount, like to a severe extent, he's probably not back anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. No. I hear you. I don't think the Red Sox have total interest in bringing him back at this point. But no, I'm not. If I'm 500 and I'm the Red Sox, I probably am just trying to push my luck, especially if things kind of stay as they're staying right now with the Rangers and the Indians are like the wild card and the A's are like right there for that second wild card team, but none of those teams are very good and they're all have problems of their own. And if we're going to hover around that 500 mark, I would bet the Red Sox more than any of those teams would be the one to catch fire. Now the Red Sox, I don't think are going to win the division. I know where it's in June, but I'm already saying I really don't think they're going to win the division. And I don't think they're going to get the first wild card either. So right now, to me, it seems like a four-team race for that, or even five if you include the Angels, five-team race for that second wild card. And if the Red Sox can get there, you know, anything can happen. So I would just push your luck with this team. I don't think you're going to get that much for Porcello, Holt, Moreland, where it would be worth just subtracting a couple wins to lose more of a positioning in the playoffs. JD Martinez may be a different story, but again, we don't know what he would do with his opt-out. So I would, if I'm 500 Red Sox and I'm like a couple games out of the wild card, I'm standing pack and being like, look, this team can catch fire at any moment. Maybe get a bullpen guy, not for like a good prospect, but the Red Sox really don't have anything. So I don't know.
Jaron Duran and Tristan Casas just moved into Baseball America's top 100.
98-99, right?
Yeah, Casas is going to go way up soon.
You can't trade either of those guys.
If Dave Dombrowski trades Jaron Duran, I will lead the campaign that gets him out of a job.
I'm going to hold you to that, Dave, if that happens.
I'll make you some flags, Dave.
We'll need more than flags. We'll need pitchforks, torches, and a small army.
We'll help finance this operation. How does that sound?
Sounds great.
We'll get the elephants from Thailand that JD Martinez rode in the offseason, and they'll help the protest. We'll ride them to Dombrowski's office. That'd be a really long elephant ride for me.
We'll stream it.
We'll stream it. Chris, weigh in here, man. What would you do? What are your inclinations about the Red Sox potential of selling off?
So there's like three different versions of Chris that look at this. So version one of Chris wonders why last year, and I know it's mostly money, the Hanley thing, the decisive thing to be like, we're just going to get rid of Hanley for apparently no reason. They said it was baseball reasons, whatever. I don't really
sucked.
Care. I'm not going to get into that.
And you saved $20 million.
I'm not going to get into that. I don't really care the reason. Like that was such a decisive move. That was a decisive move, but we're still holding on to Eduardo Nunez. We're still holding on to Steve Pierce. It's like, where is the decisive move this year? There hasn't been one. It's all just been like, fill this guy, and this guy's going in the aisle, fill this guy. And it's just, I don't know. After that last year, it just seems to me that it's like, Nunez isn't helping this ball club win anything. You know what I'm saying? Except he's just a warm body at this point. Steve Pierce as well. So it's like, why aren't we just cutting bait with them? Oh, right. They're Dombrowski guys. That's why. Okay. Moving on.
I think it's because there's nobody else.
It's mostly because there's nobody else.
There's nobody else. Hanley point,
Eduardo
Nunez was going to make $20 million if he had X amount of at-bats this year, he'd be cut.
True.
Yeah.
True.
You don't have that financial stake.
That's the other thing. Like, part of it tells me is because of that extra financial thing with Hanley. I know that. Like, I'm not stupid to not know that. But it's just one of those things where it's just like, we haven't seen that move yet. You know what I mean? Like, we haven't seen that, like, this is what we're doing move. It's all just been kind of like herky-jerky moving parts around. And you do the hokey-pokey, that's what it's all about. But the second one of me is the guy that says maybe they should sell, and only to a certain degree. Like, there are, I'm counting it now, like four guys, Rick Porcello, Martinez, Moreland, Nunez, JBJ, Steve Pierce, Brock Holt. Like, those are guys that they might not net you a lot, but they could net you something. Brock Holt, admittedly, probably could net you a little bit of something. The guy that I'd be interesting to see what they did with is Eduardo Rodriguez. That's going to be interesting. Because he's your biggest bargaining chip. And if you can get a guy like Nathan Eovaldi to come back and Brian Johnson and Hector Velasquez come back, well, at the rate Erod has been pitching, you could probably plug one of those guys in and get equal value, you know? But
no.
Maybe.
Well,
timeout.
Back on that. He has a 377 FIP, 1-2. You don't want to. I don't think the Red Sox, you want to subtract from an already depleted rotation where the depth of the rotation is the problem.
There's only certain scenarios that I would subtract from that. And that's if you're hovering around 500.
If they're still 500 by then, even if you can talk yourself into saying, well, if we buy, we can win the second wildcard spot. Great. Enjoy the first round knockout. Who cares? So I'd rather just sell and say, you know what? This ain't it. Let's try really hard for 2020.
Well, yeah. See, that's the third thought of me is, what about like a retool, like an on the fly? Let's retool a little bit and see if we can make a push. You know what I'm saying? Not sell the farm out for anything, but just a retool. Like, send certain guys away. Like Erod being moved in that instance is a retool. Like, you're hoping to get something better back that can help you out elsewhere, maybe a couple different places. You know what I'm saying? It's tough because it is a little early. And since there's what, like Pat said, it was five teams that are legit contenders for right now, they're legit contenders for that second wild card slot. It's hard to say that I would spend prospect capital, which goes back to the off season when they could have spent, as Dave has said multiple times, they could have spent that $6.25 million on Steve Pierce on a couple of relievers. And it's frustrating to see right now that we're like sitting here on June 12th saying that the Red Sox might be sellers in a year that they just won the World Series before. You know, it's crazy. But it makes sense at the same time. Sell off the guys that have that are coming up on free agency. Why keep them around? That's my thought. If you're really looking at like this year, you're probably not going to make it. Did make sense.
Yeah, and
but Mookie Betts off limits. Like it just okay, no. Okay. Sorry, all set. Like
never.
JBJ
happened.
Though. JBJ yeah. though. I'm good with that.
If you could get something for JBJ and just sign a stopgap center fielder for 2020 and knowing that Jaron Duran's going to be ready for the job midway through the year, I'm all for that. And before you say JBJ, you could get him at a bargain, whatever you pay him in his next contract, it's going to be more than what Jaron Duran makes on a rookie deal. And Jaron Duran can be just as productive as Jackie Bradley Jr. in different ways. No one's saying he's as good a defender, but he's a great on-base machine. He has unbelievable speed. He's basically I see a poor man's Jacoby Ellsbury when I see him out there.
Well, we'll see. He's early into his minor league career, and I'm excited about him. Don't get me wrong. What I was going to say is I think if the Red Sox even stand pat with their atrocious bullpen and all, they still have a pretty good shot. I would say they have the best shot of any of the other second wildcard team competitors of winning that second wildcard.
Yeah, but I don't really care if they win the second wildcard because, yeah. Great, you're in the tournament. You're going to get your ass kicked by the Astros, Yankees, or Rays pretty handily.
You're going to put Chris Sale on the mound. He's going to pitch a gem, and then some random bullpen bum is going to come and blow the game.
Unless you somehow infuse titanium into the elbows of Chris Sale and David Price, how are you going to possibly talk yourself into winning a series with that type of bullpen, with that type of rotation, that type of everything?
Well, we don't know what Nathan Eovaldi is going to bring when he comes back. And I still have hope that Nathan Eovaldi could be a solid three if things go right. And then you kind of mix and match and hope for the best that you get, like a good version of Porcello or Rodriguez on a given night. And Sale and Price are looking like one of the more formidable 1-2 duos in the league. So if you get into the wild card and you have Sale and Price and then Nathan Eovaldi third, and let's say Nathan Eovaldi is doing well, I mean, that's pretty intimidating going
you get into the wild card, you have one game.
Well, yeah, so Sale's pitching that one game. I'm feeling pretty good. I'm feeling pretty good against who the Rangers
feeling
have.
Okay if it's a Mike 7-8 Minor? Game.
Yeah, okay. But then we're going against Mike Minor. I can't even tell you who the A's best pitcher is. The Angels?
If you backed into the wild card, you're going against Tampa Bay or the Yankees.
And you're probably losing that.
Hands down.
Yeah. Sorry.
At this point, Tampa Bay.
One game, anything could happen. Anything could happen one game.
Yeah, but then you have to say, you're
60 games.
I'm saying you get Tampa Bay in the wild card game.
Let's say you luck in and win that one game. Then you have to luck in and beat the Astros. Then you have to luck in and beat the Yankees or the Rays, whichever one you are playing the wild card. And then you need to luck in and beat whichever team from the NL comes out, probably the Dodgers. It can be done, but boy, do you really want to risk like mortgaging like a very weak farm system for like a maybe 1% chance that you just hit the postseason fiery hot?
But in my scenario, you wouldn't be mortgaging the farm system because you just stand pat. You just wouldn't bolster it.
You don't even need
to get a bullpen. That's what I'm saying. You don't do anything.
I feel like that's the likeliest scenario this year.
They just stand pat and push their buttons.
I'm in the boat where if it doesn't change by July, I'm A-okay with saying, you know, this one ain't it, get him next year, and just selling assets to make the 2020 and 2021 Red Sox as competitive as possible.
Yeah, and I mean, I wouldn't be opposed to that, and we'll have to see where they are. I'm just saying if they stand pat, I think they have the best shot of attaining the second wild card. So, okay. Now let's get to some Twitter questions. This one from the guy Garrett, fire emoji, at GarrettStud94. He asked, would the Red Sox dare trade Betts or Martinez? We kind of talked about this. For my answer, I'm going to say they may dare Martinez if they completely collapse and they are not sold on him coming back or opting out of his contract. Betts, don't know. No. Dave.
Yeah, same here. If I'm Dave Dombrowski, I'd have a long, hard talk with JD Martinez, and I'd say, hey, are you opting out? Because we want you here for the future. However, it's not going to be happening this year, and we want to make this team as competitive as we can in the long run. Trading you, we can get a boatload. I don't want you to take it personally, and I want you back next year. And if he says yes, like, no matter what you do to me, I'm going to opt out, then I'd trade him. And if you let go of Mookie, you're a fool. There's no way to justify trading Mookie Betts.
Yeah, that is very much true. Chris?
I'm only trading JD Martinez in a scenario where, like Dave just said, you have to talk to the guy before the trade deadline comes, because you don't want to be left holding the bag at the end of the year while he goes off and makes more money. And quite frankly, the Red Sox can't really afford to lose him, because take JD Martinez out of the lineup, and my God, like I don't want to say that he's the reason that the lineup performed so well last year, but this lineup tends to follow what he does. It would be tough to be like, yeah, see you later. Thanks for making Mookie Betts an MVP or whatever, you know? And just to me, I feel like he had such a big impact that we just maybe don't see, that it's just, you can't get rid of that guy. I don't want to say like hand him a blank check, but if you're paying somebody $25 million, if you have to pick certain people to pay $25 million, he's one of them.
Yeah.
He's one of the more valuable players on the team for sure. And it would be tough to sell him off. But if things
trade go that bets south, I'm out on.
Okay. I think we're all out on the bet stream. Okay, this next question is from Lee W. Mowen, at the Lee W. Mowen, M-O-W-E-N. What prospect do you hope to see in a Red Sox jersey by the end of 2019? We've seen, like, all of them. I mean, not all of them, but, like, the ones who were at AAA, AA, and who were hovering around in 2018 in this offseason. We've seen a lot of them. Out of the ones that I have not seen, I guess, Dervin Feltman. Because, as Dave pointed out, and I don't know if you did an article about it, but you were pretty adamant on our last podcast. His numbers are significantly skewed by the weather in Portland. So
weather in Portland and two really bad outings. By and large, yes. He's been great, especially when he's not pitching when it's 40 degrees outside.
Yes. So do you agree, Dervin Feltman?
Feltman's definitely up there. Just from an intrigue standpoint, yeah. If the Red Sox do figure out their talent, Jaron Duran, pinch runner. I've seen him. He recently got promoted up to Portland, and offensively, he's been a little bit of a struggle, but he's played like six games, so who cares? But I saw one of his games. He went 1-for-5, and he had three grounders to second base. He almost beat out each one of them. I have never seen a man move as fast as Jaron Duran does down the baseline. It is ridiculous how fast that man is. And I didn't really get – I'm not going to act like I'm an expert scout when it comes to the subtle nuances of running the bases and, like, picking a lead. But, my God, if you need a pinch runner – because last year Sandy Leone was a pinch runner in the World Series. Just bring on Jaron Duran, see what he can do in December, and by God, if his speed can translate to the majors this early, you've got a late-inning weapon.
Who's the – well, on Fangraphs, he's got a 70 grade speed out of 80. So, you know, that's amazing. That's an elite score. Who's the guy that the Royals use as their pinch runner whenever they go anywhere? It starts with a T. You know what I'm talking about? That, like, it's like the most
–
Terrence Gore. Yeah. I don't know why I was thinking of him, but
that's
guy.
What I'm here for. That's literally all I'm here for, is just to bring up the obscure pieces of baseball that
you've got around the league. I've got the farm pets the pretty face.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
See it, but
yeah.
Thanks. Gee.
Pat's the guy that keeps us moving.
So Terrence Gore, 58 plate appearances, right? 34 stolen bases. He's been up to the plate 58 times, and he has 34 stolen bases. That's ridiculous. He has more stolen bases than hits. By, like, he has 10 career hits, 34 stolen bases. I don't know. That was a tangent. It was kind of related, but not really. Chris, prospect, who do you hope to see by 2019? End of 2019. Prospect, go.
Dervin Feltman.
Cool.
Thank you.
Cool, man. Also on the minor league, Brett Boston Sports Alert at BOS Sports Alert. Does Bobby Dalbec have a chance to start at first base next year? In my opinion, I don't know. Chavis is really starting to get on my nerves. Can't hit a fastball. I'm hoping he's going to adjust. I think that Chavis was a beneficiary of hitters not really having a game or pitchers not really having a game plan for him. But Chavis has got to be in the plans, I guess. And he may play second. I don't know. It's good that he has versatility. But I mean, I could see it. Moreland Pierce, both free agents. I don't know if they're going to come back. Red Sox don't have a lot of good options at second or first. There's nothing really jammed up. So, I mean, I could see it. Dave, our resident prospect expert.
If Dalbec comes up to the majors in 2020 and is a starter, it won't be as a first baseman. I love Rafael Devers. Everyone who's listening to this podcast knows that I am his biggest fan in the world. Defensively, he can't hold a candle to what Dalbec can do. Dalbec is a legit plus defender. He probably doesn't have a gold glove ceiling, but he's a lot better than what Devers can be. Chavis, as far as third baseman goes, the difference in defense is negligible. But Dalbec, it's a significant upgrade, even though Devers has turned it on a lot recently. So if I were a betting man, I say if they believe Dalbec can be the guy, that they probably make Devers learn first base in the offseason. I'm not convinced Dalbec can be the guy. He still strikes out a lot. Nobody can deny how good he could be. His ceiling is ridiculously high. But I need to see it at least a AAA first. And if the Red Sox are looking for an internal option for first base, like on the cheap 2020, it's more likely to be Josh Ockamy as a platoon than it is Bobby Dalbec, at least out of the gate.
Good news, though. Dalbec's strikeout rate in double A right now is only 25.8, which is down from like 31, 37 single A.
I mean, it is encouraging that it's down, but you also have to take that with a grain of salt because he's repeating a level.
Yes, that is true. I mean, double A, I think there have been studies done, and that double A and triple A in terms of like talent level and who you're playing, it's about the same. So there shouldn't be much of a difference.
I don't deny that, but yeah. Just the fact that Dalbec's seen this level before. Last year, he hadn't, and correct me if I'm wrong here, but I believe this is the first year where he's repeated a level. So he had a whole year to sort of see, okay, this is what the competition is I'm going up against. And it's not major league competition yet. So the fact that he's lowering his strikeout rate is to be expected. Had it stayed stagnant, I'd be worried.
Okay, yeah. But that is a pretty big drop down. So, I mean, that's at least like a respectable level. So that's encouraging a little bit. What about you, Chris? Bobby Dalbec, first base?
I'm just deferring to Dave on that one.
Yeah, and getting back to you, Dave, I didn't even think about it. Yeah, Devers would probably move to first. That would probably be the most pragmatic solution because Devers, while he's definitely improved defensively this year, I think Dalbec's, as you said, his ceiling at third is a lot higher. So
yeah, and it's not shuffling. Like, and just to add to that, Dalbec's ceiling as a defender isn't like his ceiling as a hitter where there's a really low floor. Dalbec is a very high floor defender. He's already, his defense, I'd say, is already major league caliber. It's just a matter of lowering the strikeouts and making more consistent contact because, my God, when he hits it square, it goes a mile. He has the glove to play every day, but he just needs to make better contact.
Yeah, on a similar note, and this isn't a Twitter question, but I'm curious, what have you guys been thinking of Michael Chavis's kind of falling down to earth a little bit? Have you guys been... Do you guys think he will turn it around again, or do you think that he's been figured out, or what's your take on his rookie year so far, Dave?
This happens. He's a rookie. As guys, as coaches and stuff around the league get more information on how to adjust to him, he'll just have to adjust to that. I don't think he's ever going to be the borderline MVP candidate he looked like in the first month of the season, but he's going to be an everyday major leaguer. He'll be good.
I hope so. I hope he doesn't turn into the next Will Middlebrooks because I don't think I can take another Will Middlebrooks. Like I know you hate Will Middlebrooks for other reasons, but I'm just saying, like, I love Will Middlebrooks. I can't take that emotionally.
Yeah. And I do understand my hatred of Will Middlebrooks is entirely foolish and not based in any sort of rationale.
No, okay, cool.
Yeah, like, I realize I'm not justified in hating him at all. I just hate him because, you know, he's the reason Kevin Youkilis is gone. And, you know, it's not really his fault for that, but.
Yeah, I got you. What about you, Chris? Michael Chavis, have you been, what have you been noticing with him?
It's the same thing that Dave mentioned, you know, the league adjusts to you, so it's like your turn to adjust back. And so far, he hasn't adjusted back, which may or may not be a good thing, but at the moment, it is wait and see, but at the same time, you hope he adjusts back and becomes at least serviceable.
Yeah, and Red Sox could definitely use all the production right now. So our last question here is from Sports Opinions Podcast at Sports Opinion 30. What move would you like to see the Red Sox make to shore up the team? Chris, you go first.
Why do you always give me the hard ones to go first?
I just like randomly, I'm like, wow, I've been making Dave go first a lot. That's not very nice. Let me get Chris into it.
So my favorite thing that you do is try to read out the display handles and all of that on Twitter. It's one of the things that like makes me live. but
you're welcome.
That's tough because it's hard. We don't know where the Red Sox are at right now. Like that's tough. I would love to see them get a guy like Brad Hand, but they're not going to because they don't have the prospect capital to do it. To shore up the team, though, it's got to be another pitcher of some sort, whether bullpen or starting. But I guess my biggest wish is Brad Hand, but that's probably not going to happen. So I'm just going to leave it at that.
Yeah, I just need to, like, clarify this. So the tweet said to shore up, like S-U-R-E, up. And then I was like, what? Is it shore up? It's shore up. That's like the correct idiom, but yeah, I don't know. I just have to correct
this guy
that.
Out here correcting everybody's
English major. No, because I got confused. I was like, have I been saying that wrong and like spelling that wrong for the last like 10 years? But it turns out I was cool. Not to call this person out because it was a great question. Dave, what about you? What would you like to see happen?
Trade somebody who knows how to throw a baseball for someone who's not Jaron Duran, Bobby Dalbec, or Tristan Casas.
Okay. What about Darwinson Hernandez?
I think he belongs in the major leagues right now, him and Feltman.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I don't have a specific person that I would like the Red Sox to trade for because it's going to be relative to where they are at and different price tags and that's a very fluid situation right now, but that person looks like a reliever at a medium cost where, as Dave said, you don't give up one of your top prospects. So it's a perfect world scenario. Maybe unrealistic, but I don't know. Red Sox need a decent reliever.
Ian Kinsler for Ty Buttrey?
Oh, we don't have
how about,
Brock Holt for Ty Buttrey.
I got one for you. Felipe Vasquez. Or... Ooh.
You think the Pirates are going to be out?
Or Kyle Crick.
Kyle Crick? Pirates
I'm
are
just I'm just looking at the Pirates because they're a dumpster fire as well. So
they are 30-36 right now.
It's tough to answer this question because there's so many teams that are in it, and the teams that are in it are the only ones that you'd want bullpen help from for the most part because the rest of them all have pretty terrible bullpens. If you're looking for bullpens or pitchers.
Yeah.
Brad Ziegler's still alive?
He is.
I thought he retired.
It did?
I had an inexplicable love of him in 2016.
He did retire.
Yeah. That's a shame. He probably sucked the last few years, too. I think I looked into him, and he wasn't that good last year. He pitched last.
We need to start looking at relievers who are kind of good. I don't know. We'll see how this plays out. But yeah, Ziegler didn't do. He didn't do great. Yeah, he was pretty bad. But that year with the Red Sox, though, he was good.
Missed that. I was all about that.
I think we all were. So on the docket coming up, the Red Sox, after this Rangers series concludes, we're going to play the Baltimore Orioles. That could be a series the Red Sox could get 3 wins and put insert themselves back into kind of competitive territory until they have to play the team with the best or close to the best winning percentage in the league in the Minnesota Twins. Let's talk about the Twins and the Red Sox. Like, are you guys a believer in the Twins?
No, I want to talk about the Orioles for a second.
Go for it.
I think it's going to be hilarious that if they sweep the Orioles, people are going to be like, see, look, this team's fine, but the Orioles are just another trash organization. And that's what I'm looking forward to this weekend. But what would be hilarious, and this is masochist Chris, I guess, is if the Red Sox dropped like 2 out of 3 or something like that. Is it a 3-game or a 4-game?
3.
Yeah, if they dropped like 2 out of 3, that'd be I'll be super upset about that one.
Yeah, I feel like the Red Sox have gotten on this trend, like, outside the Royal Series, where they just, like, lose the first 2 games of, like, every series, and then can pick up maybe 1 or 2 if it's depending on it's a 4-game series, so it kind of doesn't feel as bad, but it is bad, make no mistake about it. Like, the Yankee series, they lost the first 2, won the last 1. Astro series, lost the first 2, won the last 1. Indians, it was a reverse thing. Rays lost the first 2. And then 1-1. Rangers lost the first 2, and now they have a chance to tie the series. It's just, I feel like whenever
it's exclusively what they do against playoff teams.
Yeah, currently, because they usually beat bad teams for part.
Which is what you're supposed to do as a baseball team. Like, you're supposed to beat up on the bad teams, but you're supposed to tread water against the good teams. They're not treading water against the good teams.
Oh, and, like, the thing is, like, even the mediocre teams, like the Indians and Rangers, they just keep shooting themselves in the foot. Like, the Indian series, we can go back and have another rant about that. They should have won that series. The Red Sox very well should have won that game on Monday, too, against the Rangers. Like, these are average teams that you're supposed to be beating because you're supposed to be a good team, and it's just, it's not happening. But then they play the Blue Jays and White Sox, so pretty easy schedule besides the Twins. Dave, what about you? Any thoughts on this upcoming schedule?
I don't care if they beat the Orioles. I don't.
What if they sweep the Twins? How would you feel?
Okay, that'd be pretty damn impressive, but don't talk to me about the Orioles. If anyone at all gets hyped up by what the Red Sox do to the Orioles, I want to remind you that the Portland Sea Dogs would beat them in a 5-game series.
I'm going to drive a hype train this weekend, I think.
Against the Orioles? Yeah, you just got to get, like, please take over the RSU Twitter account and just, like, go insane on there about the...
I'm going to be like, this team is awesome.
We're back! Yeah. Everybody said we could do it.
Yeah, there we go. I'm just going to have, like, way over-the-top hype about this series.
We're going to lose a lot of followers, but I'm happy. I want to see this.
I don't know if we will again.
No, I don't know. We're pretty stable. Okay, guys. That's going to do it, though. Departing thoughts, Dave?
Yeah, I mentioned it earlier, but Tristan Casas, Jaren Duran, both in Baseball America's Top 100. Expect their stock to be playing. And also, Anthony Flores is going to start the season with the Lowell Spinners. If they haven't started their season yet, they'll be starting it very soon. It actually has started yet, but he's another guy who could easily crack the top 100 before the end of the year. So, low minors, things are looking up.
Okay, Chris.
I'm super excited to watch the Twins play baseball.
I am, like, still shocked that they're this good, so I'm, like, in a state of, like, are they really this?
I'm not shocked because they were in the playoffs in 2017. Granted, they played 1 game.
Think they won 85 games that year, though.
They did a lot of good stuff this past year. That's what my thought was. But
yeah, they have some good pieces. But, like, did I think Jorge Polanco was going to be an MVP candidate or Max Kepler was going to hit like he did? No.
This is not a Twins podcast, but I thought Max Kepler was going to take a step forward this year.
And he did. I didn't know it was going to be this much, and I didn't think Jake Odorizzi would revert back to his original self either.
I don't think anyone saw that one coming. Yeah, so this series will be interesting, and it's almost like, what do you say if the Red Sox go and sweep the Twins? It's just like my brain is just gonna be broken. Like I'm just cognitive
dissonance at its finest.
Yeah, I'm just gonna be broken. That's what's gonna happen.
Yeah, wishful thinking. Hopefully, when we speak next time, that'll happen. My departing thought is, I just got an update from ESPN and the St. Louis Blues.
Officially
beat the Boston Bruins in the Stanley Cup 4-1. Kind of a reversal of the 2013 World Series of the Red Sox. You know, they beat the Cardinals. So, I mean, I guess the world evens out.
St. Louis outscored the Rams.
Yeah. Oh, right. Yeah, that too. Wow. Well, yeah, that's funny. Yeah, but that's actually going to do it for this episode. 52 episodes, guys. You can find this podcast on a variety of platforms, including Anchor, iTunes, Spotify, iHeartRadio, if our lovely affiliates, The Grueling Truth, put it on there, Stitcher, bottom of the line. I mean, moral of the story, you can find this podcast a lot of different places. Go to RedSoxUnfiltered.com and check out our content. We have recaps, updated news, and a lot of fresh opinion content on there. Moreover, follow us on Twitter at BoSoxUnfiltered and like us on Facebook. I think there's like a bunch of random bots liking our Facebook because there's been like 50 likes in the past few days and like none of them have like any friends. But I don't know why.
Russia loves us.
I was just going to make that joke. Damn it, Dave. Yeah, Russia loves us. okay, guys. That'll do it for this episode. Let's go, Red Sox. Let's take one new text against Texas and then sweep the Orioles and the Twins and go on a 20-game winning streak. That sounds good. Red Sox will be in first place in that time. Uh-huh. All right, guys.
I need to just do like a blooper
I'm gonna create a blooper set. Like...
What a shit effort.
On our part?
You guys. The Bruins.
It was not our most spirited evening, so.
Oh, no, I was watching the whole thing on stream and like, Bennington played out of his mind, but Jesus Christ, the rest of the Bruins just played like ass.
And I'm the one who always says
peripherals. Wait,
peripherals. It's peripherals.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like the actual pronunciation.
And that's what I thought I'd say. Maybe I say it too. I don't know.
Like, I don't say it that often. Peripheral. Do I say it wrong?
I say it all the time. Peripheral.
Yeah, peripheral. I say it on occasion. But
we live in a world where it's acceptable to say frustrated. So.